A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet, Turner. Now, in black and white, a shield appears with the letters WB and the inscription Warner Brothers Pictures presents. Titles appear over a city skyline. Gary Cooper is Howard Rourke. Patricia Neal is Dominique Frankel. A sleek modern skyscraper turns, revealing a book cover, The Fountainhead. This film has been described by Descriptive Video Service, a division of the Media Access Group at WGBH, with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Carrie Danahy and Justin Soule. Read by Miles Neff. For more about DBS, call 1-800-333-1203. More titles: Raymond Massey, Kent Smith, Robert Douglas, Henry Hull, Ray Collins, Maroni Olson, Jerome Cowan. Screenplay by Ayn Rand from her novel The Fountainhead, copyright 1948. Music by Max Steiner, produced by Henry Blank, directed by King Vidor. Now an old man holds a sketch of a modern home with jutting slab-like roofs. Another man, veiled in shadow, faces him.
Do you want to stand alone against the whole world? There's no place for originality in architecture. Nobody can improve on the buildings of the past. One can only learn to copy them. We've tried to teach you the accepted historical styles. You refuse to learn. You won't consider anybody's judgment but your own. You insist on designing buildings that look like nothing ever built before. The school has no choice but to expel you. It's my duty as your dean to say you'll never become an architect.
Later.
You can't hope to survive unless you learn how to compromise. Now watch me. In just a few short years, I'll shoot to the top of the architectural profession, because I'm going to give the public what it wants. You'll never get anywhere. So you want to work for Henry Cameron, huh? Oh, I know he was a great architect 30 years ago, but he fought for your modern architecture, and he's done for now. What do you get out of it?
Later.
Why do you want to work for me? You're setting out to ruin yourself. You know that, don't you? I ought to throw you out of here right now before it's too late.
I wish I'd done this at your age.
No, why did you have to come to me? I'm perfectly happy with the drooling dolts I've got. I don't want any fool visionaries starving around here. You're an egotist. You're impertinent. You're too sure of yourself. 20 years ago, I'd have punched your face with the greatest of pleasure. You're coming to work for me tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.
The shadowy man reaches for his drawings.
No, leave these here. Now get out. Wait! What's your name?
Howard Rourke.
Howard leaves. As the old architect smiles to himself, the pages on his desk calendar flip, blown by a breeze. Now several skyscrapers dot the New York City skyline. On a sidewalk, the old architect, Henry, shambles along.
Get your money, banner here, read all about it. Money, banner, paper, mister.
Henry pushes the newspaper boy away, but the kid keeps on him.
Give me that paper.
Henry takes one and tears it into pieces.
Now give me another one.
Henry throws down a handful of coins.
Give me all of them.
I said give me all of them.
A small crowd gathers around him.
You all think I'm beaten, don't you?
That's all the money I've got. But I can still do that with my money. I can still do that.
Henry stops and the onlookers follow his gaze to Howard. The tall, lanky architect puts an arm around Henry and leads him away. Later, in a dimly lit hallway, the two men stop at an office door. Written on its window are the words, Howard Rourke, architect. As Howard unlocks the door, Henry wobbles backward.
It's no use, Howard. Why don't you give up?
Howard puts his arm around Henry and takes him into the office.
Come inside.
It's no use. You took over when I gave it up, my heir, eh? And look at it. You haven't got any further than I did, and you won't.
We'll see.
How many years have you been on your own now, and what have you got to show for it? You've done 4 buildings in all these years.
Framed photos showed the sleek, boxy buildings.
After the kind of struggle you've had...
I didn't expect it to be easy. But those who want me will come to me.
They don't want you, son. Don't you understand? This is what they want. Gail Winans' banner. The foulest newspaper on earth. You hold your own ideas and you'll starve. Gail Winans gives people what they ask for. The common, the vulgar, and the trite. And it's made him the most powerful man living. Can you fight that?
I never notice it.
Henry points out the window.
You see those people down there? You know what they think of architecture?
I don't care what they think of architecture or anything else.
I don't want to see what they'll do to you. Me, I'm through. I've had enough. I don't want any part of Gail Winans.
He smashes the window with a T-square. Pressing his hands to his temples, Henry collapses to the floor. Howard kneels at his friend's side and listens for a heartbeat, then stands and dials the phone.
Get me an ambulance.
Now, buildings move past an ambulance window. Inside, Henry lies on a cot.
Howard, look at those buildings. Skyscrapers. The greatest structural invention of man. Yet they made them look like Greek temples. Gothic cathedrals. And mongrels of every ancient style they could borrow. Just because others had done it. I told them that the form of a building must follow its function. The new materials demand new forms. That one building can't borrow pieces of another's shape, just as one man can't borrow another's soul. Howard, every new idea in the world comes from the mind of some one man. And you know the price he has to pay for it.
Henry spots a building with sides set back like steps.
I built that. Howard, you do me a favor. All those things of mine that you're keeping for me in your office, I want you to burn them. All my papers, my drawings, my contracts, everything, burn them, will you?
Yes.
I don't want to leave anything to the world. I'm sorry I'm leaving you to face them. Howard, it's no use. Give in. Compromise. Compromise now. You'll have to later anyway.
Why are you saying that to me? That's not what you did.
That's why I'm saying it. Because it's not what I did. Do you want to end up this way? It's your future. Do you want it?
Yes.
Then may God bless you, Howard. You're on your way into hell.
Henry closes his eyes and his head falls back on the pillow. Howard gently rests Henry's hand on his chest. Later at his office, Howard sits facing a wood stove. He tosses Henry's nameplate and stacks of documents into the fire. As glowing cinders rise from the lapping flames, Howard finds a drawing of a skyscraper signed by Henry. The building is crossed out with a large X and is labeled Not Built.
Hello, Howard. Hello, Peter.
Just passing by, thought I'd drop in. I haven't seen you for such a long time. Did you know Guy Franklin made me his partner last week?
No.
You see, you don't keep track of my career, but I watch yours. Yes, it's Franklin and Keating now. I guess I don't have to tell you that Guy Franklin is the leading architect in the country.
No, you don't have to.
Remember, I told you once I'd rise.
Howard hurries across the room to the phone.
Hello? No, you have the wrong number.
Are you waiting for something, Howard?
You were telling me about Guy Franklin.
I was just reminding you of what I once predicted. I hate to see you brought down to this. But remember how we started? And look at us now. Haven't you had enough of it?
Why did you come here, Peter?
Because we're old friends, and I hate to see you being beaten.
I'm not.
Oh, it's no use pretending now. You haven't had any clients for a year.
You're wrong, Peter, for a year and a half.
Well, you might have a couple of $100 left, and then it's the end.
I have $14 left and 57 cents.
And all those bills? It's an unpaid electric light bill, isn't it?
It's a disconnect notice. And if you look in the drawer over there, you'll find an eviction notice, too.
Well, how do you expect to go on?
That's my concern and not yours.
Peter pulls his wallet from his coat pocket.
Now, don't protest, Howard. You can pay me back anytime. You need it.
Thank you, Peter. I don't need it.
But I want to help you.
I don't give or ask for help.
Peter turns away.
Oh, why don't you drop it?
What?
A pose. All the ideals, if you prefer. You can't stand alone. Give in. Learn to get along with people. Start to design the kind of buildings everybody else does. Then you'll be rich. You'll be famous. You'll be admired. You'll be one of us.
Is that what disturbs you about me, Peter? That I want to stand alone? Is that it?
I don't know.
Go home, Peter.
Howard looks down at his bare wrist.
It's getting late.
Have you lost your watch, Howard?
I hocked it. Good night.
Good luck.
As Peter leaves, Howard sits back by the stove and shoves the skyscraper drawing into the fire. Howard hurries to the phone.
Hello?
Mr. Rourke?
Yes.
I promised to give you our answer today, Mr. Rourke.
But unfortunately, the board of directors hasn't reached a decision yet. I know you've been kept waiting a long time, but the drawings you submitted for our building are so unusual that we find it difficult to decide.
I think I can promise you a definite answer tomorrow. If not tomorrow, then it'll have to wait over the weekend.
But by Monday, we'll know. You've been wonderfully patient with us, Mr. Rourke. Can you wait a little longer?
Yes. I'll wait. Thank you.
Howard glumly sets down the receiver. His brow furrows as he ruffles a bill in his hands. Later, in a conference room, Howard stands beside a model. Four thick pillars sit side by side, holding up a wide, slender skyscraper.
Mr. Rourke, the commission is yours. The board of directors of the Security Bank of Manhattan has chosen you as the architect for our new building.
My congratulations, Mr. Rourke. You've done a beautiful job.
The board is quite impressed by the project you submitted.
It's a tremendous assignment, an unusual opportunity for an architect. You're unknown, but you'll be famous when this building is erected.
It's a chance you've wanted for years, isn't it?
Yes.
It's yours.
On one minor condition. Oh, it's just a small compromise. And when you agree to it, we can sign the contract.
What is it?
Well, of course, we wouldn't alter your plans in any way. It's the brilliant ingenuity of your plans that sold us on the building.
But its appearance is not of any known style. The public wouldn't like it. It'd shock people. It's too different, too original.
Originality is fine, but why go to extremes? There's always a middle course.
So we want to preserve your beautiful design, but just soften it a little with a touch of classical dignity. Here.
Two of the men get up.
We've had this made to show you our general idea. It's very simple. All you have to do is copy it. We want you to adapt your building like this.
They hide the pillars behind a Greek portico and classical windows.
Now there's a touch of the new and a touch of the old. So it's sure to please everybody. The middle of the road. Why take chances when you can stay in the middle? You see? It doesn't spoil anything, does it? And we must always compromise with the general taste, Mr. Rourke. You understand that, I'm sure.
No. If you want my work, you must take it as it is or not at all.
But why?
A building has integrity, just like a man, and just as seldom. It must be true to its own idea, have its own form, and serve its own purpose.
But we can't depart from the popular forms of architecture.
Why not?
Because everybody's accepted them.
I haven't.
Do you wish to defy our common standards?
I set my own standards.
Well, do you intend to fight against the whole world?
If necessary.
But after all, we are your clients, and it's your job to serve us.
I don't build in order to have clients. I have clients in order to build.
Mr. Rourke, we can't argue about this. The decision of our board was final. We want these changes. Will you accept the commission on our terms or not?
You realize, of course, your whole future is at stake.
This may be your last chance. Well? Yes or no, Mr. Rourke?
Howard closes his eyes and takes a deep breath.
No.
You realize what you're doing?
Quite.
He rolls up his blueprints.
Rourke, this is sheer insanity. Can't you give in just once? After all, you have to live.
Not that way.
How else? Don't you have to work?
I'd rather work as a day laborer if necessary.
Howard leaves. A fourth man sits at the end of the table, smoking.
Well, can you beat that?
No.
It was you who recommended this Rourke in the first place. You chose him. You said he would be good.
Wasn't he? You suggested those changes. You said he'd accept them.
Oh, yes, so I did. Of course, as I told you, Mr. Gale Winant wants buildings that show a classical influence.
Then why did you pick this man?
An experiment, gentlemen. A very interesting experiment.
But what are we going to do?
Pick another architect, of course.
One of the men nods compliantly.
Yes, Mr. Toohey.
Now a sign stretches over a colonnade, the banner, the newspaper for the people. In a spacious office, Mr. Toohey sets up an easel.
I'm sure you know that I seek nothing for myself, Mr. Winant. My only motive is a selfless concern for my fellow men. The new building of the Security Bank is such an important undertaking, and you hold the controlling interest, Mr. Winant. The board of directors has attempted to pick an architect quite unsuccessfully. They will accept anyone you choose, and I felt it my duty to offer you my advice.
Whom do you recommend?
The rising star of the profession, Peter Keating. No other architect can equal his ability.
That, Mr. Wynand, is my sincere opinion.
I quite believe you.
You do?
Of course. But, Mr. Toohey, why should I consider your opinion?
Well, after all, I am the architectural critic of the Banner.
My dear Toohey, don't confuse me with my readers.
I took the liberty of bringing you some samples of Peter Keating's best work. You may judge for yourself.
Mr. Toohey set several drawings on the easel. Mr. Wynand grimaces at the tall buildings, all with columns and porticos at their bases.
If you have seen any of these buildings...
I have. They were excellent 2,000 years ago when they were built for the first time.
Oh, but surely you're not in favor of so-called modern architecture. It's worthless, because it's merely the work of a few unbridled individualists. Artistic value is achieved collectively by each man subordinating himself to the standards of the majority.
I read that in your column yesterday.
You did. Thank you. Now, the greatness in Peter Keating's personality lies in the fact that there is no personality stamped upon his buildings.
Quite true.
Thus, he represents not himself, but the multitude of all men together.
And produces great big marble bromides.
I believe I'm failing to sell you, Peter Keating.
Why, no. You're succeeding.
Mr. Wynand knocks the drawings down.
Your Keating is worthless, so he's probably the right choice for that building. He's sure to be popular. You wouldn't expect me to pick a man of merit, would you? I've never hired a good architect for any of the banks, hotels, or other commercial structures I've built. I give the public what it wants, including your column, Mr. Toohey.
Am I to understand that you would choose Peter Keating?
I really don't care. One of those fashionable architects is just as inept as another.
Sitting at his desk, Mr. Wynand smiles and snaps.
I think you have a good idea, however. I think I will decide according to the advice of the Banner's architectural experts.
Yes, indeed, Mr. Wynand.
The newspaper tycoon opens up his paper and finds a column entitled One Small Voice by Ellsworth M. Toohey.
You're not my only expert, Mr. Toohey. You have a rival.
Another column is entitled Your House by Dominique Francon.
I should consult Dominique Francon as well.
Mr. Wynand presses a button on his intercom.
Yes, sir?
Ask Miss Francon to come in.
Miss Francon and I do not always agree.
I'm sure of it. Yes?
Wynand, I know it's inexcusable, but Miss Francon is not in the building. Shall I telephone her home and ask her to come here at once?
No.
Mr. Wynand swiftly gets to his feet and heads for the door. He grabs a hat and a pair of gloves from a hat rack.
Mr. Wynand, you're not going in person.
No, Toohey, one of these days you'll bore me.
I shall endeavor not to do so until the right time.
Now, a woman in a black satin gown stands at an open window holding a 2-foot statue. She drops it, letting it fall several stories. As the woman stares out the window despondently, Mr. Wynand enters the room behind her. She quickly turns to face him.
How did you come in?
Your maid let me in.
Without an announcement?
You can't expect her to share your attitude. You're the only person in New York who'd refuse me admittance.
Why did you come here?
I needed you at the office. I found you absent.
Her lips curl briefly into a smile.
Isn't it unprecedented for you to come in person after one of your employees?
I hoped you'd take note of that. I wanted to ask your advice about a matter which I think will be of great interest to you. I must pick an architect for the Security Bank building. Whom would you care to recommend?
No one. I don't know a single architect of ability. And you're not looking for ability, Mr. Wynand.
And if I left the choice up to you...
I wouldn't care to make it.
No? Ellsworth Toohey is very anxious to get the commission for Peter Keating.
Peter Keating is a third-rate architect.
Is he? He's your father's partner.
Oh, yes.
Aren't you engaged to Peter Keating?
Yes. If you found it amusing to tempt me by offering me a chance to help Peter's career, you miscalculated. I have no desire to help his career.
I was trying to tempt you, but I didn't find it amusing. I should like to meet Peter Keating. Will you both have dinner with me this evening? We'll discuss the commission.
If you wish.
Incidentally, I would have fired anyone else for being absent from the office.
I know it. Shall I consider myself fired?
You want to be?
Don't really care one way or another.
You know, you could do much more than write a small column about buildings. You could make a brilliant career on the Banner, if you asked me for it.
I never wanted a career on the Banner.
Tell me, what would you consider as tempting? I'd like to find something you could want.
Don't try to, Mr. Wynand. I'll never want anything. Do you know what I was doing when you came in? I had a statue which I found in Europe. The statue of a god. I think I was in love with it. But I broke it.
What do you mean?
I threw it down the air shaft.
Why?
So that I wouldn't have to love it. I didn't want to be tied to anything. I wanted to destroy it rather than let it be part of a world where beauty and genius and greatness have no chance. The world of the mob and of the banner. Do you still want me to have dinner with you tonight?
Mr. Wyman smirks.
More than ever.
He levels his gaze on her for a moment, then turns for the door. Later, in an elegant dining room, Peter, Mr. Wyman, and Dominique sit around a long table.
It's such a magnificent opportunity, Mr. Wyman. I'll do my best to please you.
I take it you want this commission.
Want it? I'd sell my soul for it.
That may be the right phrase, Mr. Keating. Everything in life has its price.
In this instance, the price is that you break your engagement to Miss Francon.
Peter's wide-eyed gaze flits from Mr. Wyman to Dominique. She stares back at him from across the table.
My engagement? Why?
For any reason you care to imagine. You may think what you wish about my motives, but that is the condition I demand.
Dominique?
No, Peter, I'm not going to help you. I'd like to see it decided between Mr. Wynand and yourself.
But would you agree?
The choice is yours. Our engagement helped you to become my father's partner. Mr. Wynand's patronage will help you much more.
Well, I'm sure this is a joke, Mr. Wynand. Things like this aren't being done.
You mean they're being done all the time, but not talked about? I grant you that I'm behaving abominably. It's extremely cruel to be honest.
I don't know what I'm supposed to do.
It's simple. You're supposed to slap my face. You were supposed to do that several minutes ago. No? You don't want to do that. Of course, you don't have to. And you don't have to accept. Would you rather refuse the commission?
No.
Fine, Mr. Keating. Now, I think it would be best if you left. Call at my office in the morning and we'll sign the contract.
Peter turns to Dominique.
If that's what you want, I'm not going to interfere. We should be grown up about it, shouldn't we? I'm sure we'll have no trouble, Mr. Wynand. Good night.
As Peter leaves, Dominique stays seated. She puts out her cigarette.
Why did you do this? Did you believe I'd agree like Peter? Did you expect to win me by your usual methods?
Of course not. I merely wanted to show you that all men are corrupt, that anyone can be bought, and that you're wrong in your contempt for me. There is no honest way to deal with people. We have no choice except to submit or to rule them. I chose to rule.
A man of integrity would do neither.
There are no men of integrity. I have many years behind me to prove it. I was born in Hell's Kitchen. I rose out of the gutter by creating the Banner. It's a contemptible paper, isn't it? But it has achieved my purpose.
What was your purpose?
Power.
Why are you trying to justify yourself to me?
I wasn't trying to just... Yes. That is what I was doing.
Why?
I think you know it.
They stare into each other's eyes. Mr. Wynand presses his lips to Dominique's. She numbly receives his kiss, her eyes looking away.
See, I suppose I'm one of those freaks you hear about. A woman completely incapable of feeling. I was engaged to Peter Keating because he was the most safely unimportant person I could find. And I knew I'd never be in love.
Hadn't you ever loved anyone?
No, and I never will. If I fell in love, it would be like the statue of the Greek god again.
I know it. I accept it. I want you to marry me.
If I ever decide to punish myself for some terrible guilt, I'll marry you.
I'll wait. No matter what reason you choose for it. Will you let me see you again?
I'm leaving the city in a few days.
Where are you going?
To Father's place in Connecticut. I'm going there so I won't have to see anyone.
What are you really seeking?
Freedom. To want nothing, to expect nothing, to depend on nothing.
Dominique stares off, then heads away. Now at a stone quarry, a worker pushes down the handle on a detonator. Elsewhere, Dominique sleeps with her head resting on a lacy pillow. Her eyes open and a peaceful smile spreads across her lips. As she turns onto her back, she stretches sleepily. Dominique throws off her covers and sits on the side of the bed. As she leans down to put on slippers, one of the straps on her nightgown droops off her shoulder. Her long nightgown flowing, Dominique rushes across the bedroom and whips open a pair of curtains that hang before open French doors. Later, Dominique walks down to a cliff overlooking the quarry, her light skirt rustling in the breeze. Carrying a matching wide-brim hat, she walks along the edge and looks down at the quarry workers. A sheer scarf around her neck flows out behind her as she heads closer to the pit. Below, sweaty men drill into walls of smooth stone. From above, Dominique surveys the quarry's expanse and the dozens of workers. Her gaze lands on a man drilling into the rock. His shirt is soaked with perspiration and his sleeves are rolled up past his elbows. Dominique studies him, her gaze moving up from the pulsating drill to his bare muscular forearm, to the rugged features of his face. It's Howard. His eyes squint under his rumpled fedora. As he wipes his brow on his sleeves, he looks up and spots Dominique watching him. Keeping his gaze fixed on her, he moves his arm away from his face, flicks the sweat off his hand, and adjusts the brim of his hat. Dominique turns but continues staring at Howard out the corner of her eye. With a soft smile, Howard looks down for a moment, then back up at the woman. The wind rustles her wavy hair. Her wide, deep-set eyes fix on the worker. As Howard leans his shoulder against the stone, his gaze stays on Dominique's smooth face and full lips. Sweat glistens on his square jaw and forehead. Dominique looks him over one more time, then turns away. As she reaches the stairs to the quarry's bottom, she glances back at Howard. His gaze is still aimed at her. Dominique's eyes widen.
Why, Miss Franken?
A foreman approaches.
How do you do? What are you doing here?
I'm out here for the summer. Father let me have his house all to myself. I'm sorry to take a look at his quarry.
Well, let me show you around, Miss Franken. This is the best gray granite in the whole state of Connecticut. Well, last month we shipped...
Who is that man?
What man, Miss Franken?
No, never mind.
As they head down into the quarry, Howard continues drilling. Looking up from his work, he spots Dominique with the foreman. She sneaks another look at him as she walks by. Later, in her bedroom, Dominique sits at a vanity brushing her hair. Staring at herself in the mirror, she slowly puts down the brush and gapes at her reflection. Her gaze wanders as she remembers Howard's drill. The shaft pulverizes the stone, and Howard's steely eyes fix on her. As the recollection fades, Dominique folds her hands together and twists her interlocking fingers. Now at the quarry, Dominique ties a horse to a rail. Wearing jodhpurs and grasping a riding crop, she marches toward the pit. She stops on a ledge above Howard and turns her back to him. Howard notices her. Taking the bit from his drill, he leans against the stone wall and stares at her as she paces. Dominique stops, looks down at him, and drips her riding crop.
Why do you always stare at me?
For the same reason you've been staring at me.
I don't know what you're talking about.
If you didn't, you'd be much more astonished and much less angry, Miss Franken.
She grins broadly.
So you know my name?
You've been advertising it loudly enough.
Her grin fades.
You'd better not be insolent. I can have you fired at a moment's notice.
Shall I call the superintendent?
No, of course not. But since you know who I am, you'd better stop looking at me when I come here. It might be misunderstood.
I don't think so.
Dominique scowls, cracks her riding crop, and storms off. Howard watches her go, smiling to himself. Now in her bedroom, Dominique leans against the wall, peering nervously toward the French doors. She rushes over and pulls them shut. With a sigh, she leans back against the doors and looks off despondently. Slowly, she stands up straight. A mischievous grin crosses her lips. She rushes across the spacious bedroom to the fireplace. Getting a poker from the fire irons, she whacks at the hearth, creating a large chip in a marble tile. She replaces the poker and rushes back across the room to the phone. Eyeing the fireplace with a wild gaze, she smirks, then dials. Later.
Come in.
A maid opens Dominique's bedroom door and Howard enters.
Good evening, Miss Franken. You sent for me?
Yes. Would you like to make some extra money?
Certainly, Miss Franken.
That marble piece is broken and has to be replaced. I want you to take it out.
Yes, Miss Franken.
Howard kneels down before the fireplace and inspects the chipped marble. Dominique fingers her necklace as she watches him hammer a chisel into the tile, cracking it.
Now it's broken and has to be replaced.
Dominique's eyes shift.
Would you know what kind of marble this is and where to order a new piece like it?
Yes, Miss Franken.
Go ahead then, take it out.
Yes, Miss Franken.
Dominique paces across the room with a sly grin.
Oh, I'm sorry. You might have thought that I was laughing at you. But I wasn't, of course. I didn't want to disturb you. I'm sure you're anxious to finish and get out of here.
Howard stops his work and glances up at her.
I mean, because you must be tired.
She takes a seat on a satiny couch.
But there must be things you'd like to talk about.
Oh, yes, Miss Franken.
Well?
I think this is an atrocious fireplace.
Really? This house was designed by my father. But there's no point in your discussing architecture.
None at all.
Surely we could choose some other subject.
Yes, Miss Franken. Generally speaking, there are three kinds of marble, the white, the onyx, and the green. This last must not be considered a true marble. True marble is a metamorphic form of limestone produced by heat and pressure. Pressure is a powerful factor. It leads to consequences which, once started, cannot be controlled.
What consequences?
The infiltration of foreign elements from the surrounding soil. They form the colored streaks found in most marbles.
Dominique strides away from Howard, casting a coy glance back at him.
This is pure white marble. You should be very careful, Miss Franken, to accept nothing but a stone of the same quality. This is Alabama marble, very high grade, very hard to find. What shall I do with the stone?
Leave it here. I'll have it removed.
All right. I'll order a new piece cut to measure and have it delivered to you. Do you wish me to set it?
Yes, certainly. I'll let you know when it comes. How much do I owe you?
She hands him a bill.
Keep the change.
Thank you, Miss Franken.
Good night.
Good night, Miss Franken.
Howard heads out the door, keeping his gaze on Dominique. As he leaves, Dominique turns away with an angry pout. Later, the broken marble pieces on the hearth are replaced by a crate marked fragile. Dominique lies on the couch wearing a checked robe.
Come in.
The maid lets in a short, balding man.
The man sent from the quarry, Miss Franken.
She angrily gets to her feet.
Who are you?
Pasquale Orsini.
What do you want?
The tall guy down at the quarry told me you got a fireplace you wanted me to fix.
Yes, yes, of course. I forgot. Go ahead.
Dominique hurriedly points him to the fireplace and rushes away. Later, Dominique rides on horseback along the ridge of a grassy hill. The horse's hooves kick up a cloud of dust as Dominique urges the animal on with her crop. She reaches the cliff overlooking the quarry and finds it completely unmanned. Her eyes widen angrily and she gallops off. Dominique races down another hill to a dirt road. She spots a line of men in the distance and heads toward them. Howard walks alone a few yards behind the others. He turns and spots Dominique approaching. His eyes narrow as she pulls the horse to a stop beside him.
Why didn't you come to set the marble?
I didn't think it would make any difference to you who came. Or did it, Miss Franco?
Dominique whips Howard across the cheek with her riding crop. As Howard holds his injured face, Dominique glares at him with wide eyes, then gallops off. Howard watches her go and lets down his hand, revealing a long cut on his cheek. Later, Dominique sits at her vanity wearing a low-cut black lace nightgown. Howard enters the room through the open French doors. Dominique stands and starts for another door, but Howard heads her off. His gaze fixes on her, and he steps closer. Dominique slowly backs away, then runs for the door. Howard reaches the door before her. Holding it shut with one hand, he shoves Dominique to the ground with the other. She glares up at Howard. Clenching her teeth, she charges him and pounds wildly on his chest. Howard grips her tightly in his arms and she struggles to writhe free. As Dominique surrenders to him, Howard leans in and kisses her forcefully. They release from the kiss. Dominique stares fearfully into Howard's eyes. She pulls away and races for the French doors. On her way out, she trips and lands on a stone patio. Howard slowly steps toward her. As he watches her on the ground, one corner of his mouth rises in a hint of a smile. Later, Howard enters a small dark cabin, strikes a match, and lights a gas lamp. The lamp illuminates Howard's lanky frame and leaves the rest of the room in shadow. Howard spots an envelope beside the lamp and tears it open. The typed letter reads, "Dear Mr. Rourke, I have been endeavoring to find you without success. Please communicate with me at your earliest convenience. I believe you are the architect I need for a special project which I have in mind. Sincerely yours, Roger Enright. P.S. I have seen your buildings." Smiling, Howard folds the letter and gazes off intensely. His eyes shift to bloody scratches on his forearm. He fingers the cuts and looks off soberly. His sad gaze shifts from the scratches to the folded letter. Tightening his lips, he pockets the letter and quickly pulls a suitcase out from under his bed. Daytime. At the quarry, Dominique approaches the stairs to the pit. Wearing her riding clothes, she scans the quarry. The foreman approaches.
Good afternoon, Miss Rankin. How are you?
She descends a few steps.
There was a man you had here. A tall, gaunt man who worked a drill. Where is he?
Oh, yes, that one. He's gone.
Gone?
Quit. Left for New York, I think.
When?
2 days ago.
What was his... No. No, I don't want to know his name.
If you want me to find him for you, Miss Franken.
No.
Now, in an office overlooking a newsroom, a pale-faced editor paces before Dominique and Mr. Toohey.
I don't know what to do. I give up. I've gone the limit. I'm at my wit's end.
That's not going very far, Alva.
It's all right for you to make cracks, but I'm in trouble. We need some excitement to boost circulation. I've got to invent a crusade, and I don't know what on earth the crusade about.
Did we start a campaign against streetcar monopolies?
We did that 2 years ago. Then we had a crusade against canned vegetables. And a crusade against Wall Street. Now, what else is there to be against? Dominique, you're such a smart woman. Couldn't you think of...
I'm not good at that sort of thing.
Gail Wynand expects results. The banner's got to be active. I've racked my brain, and I can't think of anything to denounce.
I can.
What?
Mr. Toohey throws down an advertisement for a luxury apartment building.
Oh, who cares about a building?
My dear editor, it depends on how you handle it. That building is an outrage against art and a threat to public safety.
The ad reads, Howard Rourke, architect.
Nobody's ever used that structural method before.
Yeah?
The owner of it is Roger Enright, one of those self-made men. Stubborn and rich as blazers. It's always safe to denounce the rich. Everyone will help you. The rich first.
Yeah.
Howard Rourke.
Who is he?
I wouldn't know. Think what you could do with it. Here's a super luxury apartment house going up, and there's all those poor people who have to live in the slums.
Say, we could have some Sunday supplement stories about beautiful girls who were victims of the slums.
With pictures and three-color process.
You've got something there, Ellsworth? You've got it. It's a wonderful idea. I know why it'll locate it.
Dominique and Mr. Toohey exit into the newsroom.
You know that this Enright house is a great building.
Perhaps one of the greatest.
Ellsworth, what are you after?
I dare say nobody knows what I'm after. They will, though, when the time comes.
Dominique glares at him and walks away. Now, in Mr. Wyman's office, the newspaper tycoon listens over an intercom.
So we've got three wonderful angles. Highbrow stories about the bad art, scare stories about the girders collapsing, sob stories about the poor. We get everybody riled up without any opposition at all. We'll want to defend it. It's only a building.
Dominique
now,
enters.
My first step would be...
Don't bother me with details. It's good. Go ahead. Toohey can handle it. What a surprise and what a lovely contrast to my usual visitors. Please sit down.
You have approved the campaign against the Enright House?
Yes, of course. It'll stir up a lot of noise. I'm sailing in my yacht next week. I'll be gone all winter. This thing will keep him busy while I'm away.
Have you seen drawings of the Enright House?
No.
Please send for them.
What for?
That building is a magnificent architectural achievement. Is that of no importance?
None.
You're willing to destroy it just to amuse the mob, just to give them something to scream about?
That is the policy which has made the Banner, the newspaper, of largest circulation. Don't expect me to change it.
You asked me once to tell you something I wanted. I've tried never to ask favors of anyone. But I'm going to now. Please call off this campaign.
Is the architect a friend of yours?
I've never set eyes on him. I don't know who he is, nor care.
Then why should you plead for that building?
Because it's great. There's so little in life that's noble or beautiful. I'm pleading for a man's achievement. I'm pleading for greatness.
Are you reproaching me for the Banner?
I'm begging you, Mr. Wynand.
Dominic, I would give you anything I own, except the Banner. My whole life and an unspeakable struggle have gone to make it. I will not sacrifice it for anyone on earth.
It's your right to do as you wish. It's mine to take no part in what you're doing. Please accept my resignation from the Banner.
He fixes a steely gaze on her.
I'm sorry. It's quite useless, my dear. You can't fight me. You have no chance.
I know it.
Mr. Toohey's One Small Voice column appears.
While so many are in need of shelter, effort is being wasted to erect a structural monstrosity known as the Enright House. It is designed by one Howard Rourke, an incompetent amateur.
Now, Mr. Toohey speaks at a formal dinner.
Above all rules. You are architects, and you should realize that a man like Howard Rourke is a threat to all of you. The conflict of forms is too great. Can your building stand by the side of his? I believe you understand me, Jack. If you will sign a protest against the Enright House, the Banner will be glad to publish it. And we shall win.
The men sign. Now a mailboy dumps hundreds of letters onto Alva's desk.
More of it. Look, letters to the editor. Thousands of them. All screaming against that Enright House. Ellsworth, you are wonderful. How could you ever foresee a public trend so well?
Now a sign in front of a construction site reads, the Enright House Luxury Apartment Building. Snow and bare trees surround the skeletal framework. Later, the finished building stands amid leafy trees. The new skyscraper has cantilevered floors that appear to hover one on top of the other, like open Venetian blinds. As Howard looks up at it, a stout businessman approaches.
Rourke. Mr. Enright.
Thanks.
Howard grins.
Don't pay any attention to all that public howling.
I don't.
I've been denounced so much it doesn't bother me anymore. I started out in life as a coal miner. Got where I am by acting on my own honest judgment, whether others liked it or not. When you grow older, you'll see that that's the only way to succeed in life. I know it.
They've been tough on you. They're going to get tougher. But don't worry. You'll win.
I have.
Howard points to his building.
That's the only defense you need.
I'll rest on the evidence.
That's exactly what I'm going to do. I'll be the first tenant to move into my own building. I'm going to give a party to celebrate the opening of Enright House. I'll invite them all, the press, the architects, the critics. Let them see. They think we're going to apologize, we'll celebrate instead.
Nighttime. Light shines from the windows of the Enright House, which are set in from the overhanging floors. Inside a spacious living room, Mr. Enright speaks with an elegantly dressed couple.
No, madam, I have nothing to say about this building. God gave you eyes and a mind, which you're to use. If you fail to do so, the loss is yours, not mine.
But don't you want to convince me?
Is there any reason why that should be my concern?
Mr. Enright strolls away and spots Dominique descending a suspended staircase.
I dread to think of the fate of Howard Rourke, whoever he is.
Why? You don't think he's good?
He's too good.
They shake hands and Dominique heads out to a balcony. Wearing a fitted strapless gown with a fur-trimmed decolletage, Dominique looks out at the city.
Dominique!
Hello, Peter.
What a pleasure to see you again. You look more beautiful than ever. Tell me, what do you think of this building? I've been trying to take a poll among the guests.
A what?
A poll of opinion about it.
What for? In order to find out what you think of it yourself?
Well, we have to consider public opinion, don't we?
Dominique nods. As she walks back inside, she overhears Mr. Toohey.
No, don't ever hire an architect who is a genius. I don't like geniuses. They're dangerous.
How's that?
A man abler than his brothers insults them by implication. He must not aspire to any virtue which cannot be shared.
Oh, I wouldn't know about that intellectual stuff. I play the stock market.
I play the stock market of the spirit. And I sell short.
Nearby.
It's stunning, perfectly stunning. But of course I wouldn't want to live in a house like this. One could never relax and feel homey, you know what I mean? Comfortable and sloppy and, well, homey.
No, one couldn't.
Dominique strides across the room past an older gentleman.
Dominique.
Yes, Father.
Can't understand how my own daughter can approve of this preposterous mess. It's in such uncivilized taste. Are you still going to defend it?
No. I won't try to defend it.
You know, Mr. Frank, on that stairway, it's not bad. It's a clever idea. I'm designing a building right now where I can use an idea like this and... Oh, I'd have to adapt it, of course.
Well, if one gave it some elegance, you know, a touch of Greek ornament. The engineering idea is brilliant. I could use it myself.
Dominique eyes the two men, then walks away. She approaches a model of the Enright house set up in the middle of the room. A smile crosses her lips as she studies the miniature structure. Meanwhile, Howard heads up a staircase to the main room. Wearing a tuxedo, he surveys the other formally attired guests. Across the room, Dominique spots him, and her eyes widen. Howard glances around uncomfortably and puts his hands in his pockets. Mr. Enright approaches.
Hello, I've been waiting for you. You're the guest of honor tonight, and I mean it in more than just a social sense. Whom do you want to meet first? Oh, there's Dominique Franklin looking at us. Come on.
Howard's dismayed expression gives way to a smirk as he follows Mr. Enright.
Miss Franklin, may I present Howard Rourke?
He bows.
You're Howard Rourke?
Yes, Miss Franklin. You don't know it, but Miss Franklin has a personal connection with you. She resigned from her job on the Banner in protest against their attack on your building.
How did you know that?
I heard about it.
I didn't want Mr. Rourke to know it.
Why not, Miss Franklin?
It was a perfectly futile gesture on my part.
Dominique won't admit it, but she admires your building. She understands them. I expected her to understand them.
Did you? But you didn't know me.
I used to read your column, Miss Franklin.
Enright leaves them.
I admire your work more than anything I've ever seen. You may realize that this is not a tie, but a gulf between us. If you remember what you read in my column.
I remember every line of it.
I wish I had never seen your building. It's the things that we admire or want that enslave us, and I'm not easy to bring into submission.
That depends upon the strength of your adversary, Miss Franklin.
Howard walks away, smiling. Mr. Enright returns.
Well?
Roger, why did you bring him here? Why did you deliver him to these people? Don't you see he doesn't have a chance against them?
Later, Howard sits in a dim study decorated with boxy minimalist furniture.
Come in.
Dominique enters, wearing a matching fur-collared cape over her dress. Howard remains seated, gazing upward as Dominique approaches.
I expected you to come here.
I didn't know your name. You knew mine. But you haven't tried to find me in all these months.
I wanted you to find me and have to come to me.
If it gives you pleasure to know that you're breaking me down, I'll give you a greater satisfaction.
She removes the cape.
I love you, Rourke. Would it please you to hear that I've lived in torture all these months? Hoping never to find you again and wishing to give my life just to see you once more. But you knew that, of course. That's what you wanted me to live through.
Yes.
Why don't you laugh at me now? You won. I have no pride left to stop me. I love you without dignity, without regret. I came to tell you this. And to tell you that you'll never see me again.
You want to know whether you can make me suffer, don't you? You can.
Rourke, you're everything I've always wanted. And that's why I hoped I'd never meet anyone like you. I'll give you up now, myself, rather than watch you being destroyed by a world where you have no chance.
Why are you afraid?
I know what they'll do to you. You had the genius that made the Enright House. But you were working like a convict in a granite quarry, weren't you?
I chose to do it.
Why?
Don't you know why?
Yes, because you won't conform. They'll drive you down again. Stone quarry's all you can expect in the end.
I got out of the quarry.
Did you? Do you think the Enright House is your beginning? It's your death sentence. Has any other client come to you?
No.
They won't. They hate you for the greatness of your achievement. They hate you for your integrity. They hate you because they know they can neither corrupt you nor rule you. They won't let you survive. Look, they'll destroy you.
She turns away.
But I won't be there to see it happen.
Howard slips his arm around Dominique's waist and pulls her into a passionate kiss. As he picks her up and carries her across the room, she tilts her head back and smiles dreamily.
Do you want to leave me?
Howard sits down on a couch with Dominique across his lap. He takes her face in his hand and showers kisses upon her chin, nose, and cheek.
I loved you from the first moment I saw you. And you knew it. You tried to escape from it. I had to let you learn to accept it.
He kisses her lips, then ear.
Are you going to leave me?
Yes.
I won't stop you.
Oh, Rock, don't you see? I don't want to leave you. Will you marry me? I want to stay with you. We'll take a house in some small town and I'll keep it for you. Don't laugh, I can. I'll cook, I'll wash your clothes, I'll scrub the floor. And you'll give up architecture. If you give it up, I'll remain with you forever. But I can't bear to stand by and see you moving to some terrible disaster. You can't end any other way. Save yourself from tragedy. Take a meaningless job. We live only for each other.
She nestles in the crook of his arm.
I wish I could tell you it was a temptation.
Rourke, yes or no?
No.
Dominique stands up and steps away angrily. As she picks up her cape, Howard approaches her.
You must learn not to be afraid of the world, not to take any notice of it. I must let you learn it. When you have, you'll come back to me. They won't destroy me, Dominique. I'll wait for you. I love you. I'm saying it now for all the years we'll have to wait.
They unite in an embrace.
I'll do anything to escape from you.
Dominique presses her lips to Howard's, and they linger in a soft kiss. Daytime. A speedboat races along New York Bay, leaving choppy waves in its wake. On board, Dominique sits beside the pilot, wearing her cape's fur-lined hood up. As water sprays past her, Dominique keeps a steely gaze straight ahead. The boat speeds toward a yacht heading into the harbor. On board, Mr. Winan greets Dominique.
I could have expected anything on my return except to see you coming all the way out here to meet me. If I wanted to delude myself, I'd think you were impatient to see me.
I was.
I'm very happy, my dear, no matter what your reason.
I'm honest enough to warn you that you shouldn't be.
I realize that. What was your reason?
If you found another request to make of me, I'd like to be able to grant it.
No. I didn't come to make a request, but to grant you one of yours. Do you still wish me to marry you?
More than anything I was ever capable of wishing.
I'll marry you.
As Mr. Winan kisses Dominique's hand, she looks away.
Don't you want to ask me any questions?
No.
Thank you. You're making it easier for me.
Whatever your reason, I shall accept it. What I want to find in our marriage will remain my own concern. I exact no promises and impose no obligations. Incidentally, since it is of no importance to you, I love you.
Mr. Winan puts his arm around her waist and pulls her close. As he kisses her neck, Dominique gazes wistfully toward the city skyline. Now Howard stands in an office.
No, Mr. Rourke, there is too much talk and public resentment against you. We can't take part in controversies. We can't afford to arouse antagonism. I'm sorry, but we find it impossible to give you the commission for our building. As one of our directors said, you can't expect us to stick our necks out.
No, I don't expect it.
Howard leaves, closing the door behind him. With his head bowed, he walks out a glass door marked Civic Opera Company of New York. He slowly steps toward an elevator and presses the down button. Turns his attention to a window beside him. Below, a crowd of bystanders and photographers swarm the sidewalks on either side of a building's entryway. An awning above the door reads St. Charles. Dominique, wearing a wedding gown, rushes out of the building on Mr. Winan's arm. Guests throw rice as the newlyweds get into a waiting car. In the car's side window, Dominique's hand clasps Mr. Winan's, her new wedding ring glinting in the sun. Howard clenches his fist. He watches policemen on motorcycles escort the Winans' car down the street. With a pained brow, Howard turns away from the window and gets onto the elevator. Later, Howard strolls past a construction site. He stops and reads a sign, Gordon L. Prescott, architect. With his head bowed low, he continues on. Nighttime. Wearing an overcoat, Howard walks in thick mist. A sign hung along a wall beside him reads, New York Equity Insurance Association, Ralston Holcomb, architect. Later, Howard passes another construction site. He notices a sign that reads, The Civic Opera House, Francon and Keating, architects. Howard angrily walks past the sign and stops beside a man watching the construction. As Howard looks out at the steam shovel, the man turns to him. It's Mr. Toohey.
Hello, Mr. Rourke. I hoped I'd meet you someday, like this, alone. You shouldn't mind talking to me.
What about?
There's a building that should have been yours. There are buildings going up all over the city which your great chances refused to you and given to incompetent fools. You're walking the streets while they're doing the work which you love but cannot obtain. This city is closed to you. It is I who've done it. Don't you want to know my motive?
No.
I'm fighting you, and I shall fight you in every way I can.
You're free to do what you please.
Mr. Rourke, we're alone here. Why don't you tell me what you think of me in any words you wish?
But I don't think of you.
Howard walks away. Toohey watches him go with a frown and slumps back against a wall. Now Howard and a man look at a model for a gas station.
It's great, Mr. Rourke. It's wonderful. Ever since I saw the Enright house, I knew you were the man I wanted. But I was afraid you wouldn't do an unimportant gas station for me after doing skyscrapers.
No building is unimportant. I'll build for any man who wants me, anywhere, so long as I build my way.
Now a sketch shows a two-story building. The slab-like roof sticks out high above an angled first-story wall. A caption reads, "Scheme for a store," and is signed Howard Rourke. The sketch changes to a real-life building. Another sketch entitled Project for a Farm shows a sprawling flat-roofed compound of geometric shapes with a silo in the middle. The sketch becomes real. A third sketch entitled Project for a Residence shows an oceanside home of intersecting slabs, terraces, and balconies. The sketch again dissolves to an actual structure. Another sketch shows an office building. Each floor is wider than the one below it. The sketch becomes real. In a rendering for a factory, several massive smokestacks protrude from a fortress-like keep without windows. Now Howard and a reporter look at the real factory.
Your career has been as unprecedented as your buildings. I never knew anybody to survive one of the Banner's smear campaigns. Everything was closed against you. How'd you break through?
What did you think of the Banner's campaign?
That was a vicious appeal to fools.
Haven't you answered your own question?
Yeah, but you had years torn out of your life, wasted by the Banner.
No, all these years I found some one man who wanted my work. One man who saw through his own eyes and thought with his own brain. Such men may be rare, they may be unknown, but they move the world.
How did you look for them?
I didn't. They called for me. Any man who calls for me is my kind of man.
Now a glass door reads Howard Rourke, architect. On the inside of the spacious contemporary lobby, a receptionist sits at a desk. Howard enters and the woman stands.
This is probably something very big. I made an appointment for you for 3 o'clock this afternoon at his office.
Whose office?
He telephoned half an hour ago. Mr. Gale Winans.
Howard's gaze shifts. As his brow furrows, he licks his lips and presses them together thoughtfully. Later at Mr. Winans's office, Gale sits at his desk with his back to a view of the city skyline. He starts to stand. As Howard enters, hat in hand, Gale sits back down. Howard approaches and Gale motions for him to sit. The architect remains standing.
I don't think you'll want to work for me.
Why?
You ought to feel contempt for me if you've seen the kind of buildings I put up.
You're honest, aren't you?
Thank you. That's the first time anyone ever said that about me, and it's one of the few times when I am. What I want you to build is not for the public. It's for me.
What is it?
My home. A country house. Just for my wife and me.
Did Mrs. Winan choose me for the job?
No, Mrs. Winan doesn't know anything about this. It's my own project. I've looked at buildings all over the country. Every time I saw one that I liked and asked who designed it, the answer was always Howard Rourke.
Gale walks around his desk toward Howard.
I want you to know that I have very little respect for anything on earth. The only thing I worship, and I've seen so little of it in life, is man's ability to produce work such as yours.
I believe you.
Why do you say that as if it hurt you?
It doesn't.
Listen, don't hold them against me, the things I've built. It's all those worthless commercial structures and newspapers like the Banner that have made it possible for me to have a house by you. They were only the means. You're the end.
Don't apologize for your past. It isn't necessary.
You do have courage, don't you? No one else would dare say that to me. But you're right. I was apologizing. You see, I need you. That house means a great deal to me, and you're the only one who can design it.
What kind of a house do you want?
Far from the city. I bought the land, a place in Connecticut, 500 acres. What kind of a house? The cost, whatever you need. The appearance, whatever you wish. The purpose,
You see, I want this house because I'm very desperately in love with my wife.
Howard shifts uneasily.
What's the matter? Do you think that's irrelevant?
No. Go on.
I can't stand to see my wife among other people. It's not jealousy. It's much more and much worse. I can't share her with anyone or anything. I want a house that'll be only mine and hers. Think of it as you would think of a fortress and of a temple. A temple to Dominique Wynand. I want you to meet her before you design it.
I've met Mrs. Wynand some years ago.
You have? Then you understand.
I do.
Start work at once. Drop anything else you're doing. I'll pay whatever... Forgive me. Too much association with bad architects. I haven't asked you whether you want to do it.
Yes. I'll do it.
Now, at the Wynand home, Dominique sits reading a magazine. Her husband approaches.
What's the matter, Gail?
Good evening, dear.
Why?
You look as if you felt happy.
I feel as if I were young. As I did when I was just starting and still believed the road ahead was clean and that honesty was possible.
You want it to be possible?
Yes. I never realized how much I wanted to find it. Dominique, you look very beautiful tonight.
She looks away.
No, that's not what I wanted to say. It's this. I feel for the first time that I have a right to you.
You felt you hadn't?
No, and that I'd never earn it. But now I believe that nothing will take you away from me. Nothing and no one.
I don't love you, Gail.
I know it. But you've never loved anyone else.
What makes you think so?
It wouldn't be like you. You'd never surrender to anyone. But you don't hate me any longer.
No. I found we have a great deal in common, you and I. We both had strength, but not courage. We've committed the same kind of treason somewhere.
If I have, I feel as if I'd been forgiven tonight.
Why?
I don't know. Dominique, you've always wanted to escape from the world. Would you like to live in the country, away from everything, away from the banner?
Yes. Yes, I would.
I'm having a house designed for us. It'll be my greatest gift to you. If I've been guilty in my life, this house will vindicate me.
Who is designing it?
The only man of genius I ever met. His name is Howard Rourke.
Dominique's eyes widen. She stands.
Gay, do you happen to remember why I resigned from the banner?
It was because of a campaign.
His eyes narrow.
Against the Enright house.
Dominique raises her hand to her mouth and takes several steps away from Gail.
Just one of the banner's smear campaigns. Not important enough to remember, was it, Gail? You've staged so many of them. You were away on your yacht.
Wringing her hand, she approaches Gail with a distant gaze.
He's just some architect whom you threw to the mob. It built circulation. Didn't it, Gail?
When I spoke to him, he didn't remind me of it.
Why should he? He knows he's won. He could afford to be generous.
I don't accept generosity.
I never thought he could win against you, but he has. Maybe we're wrong about the world, you and I. He's the one who's earned the right to despise us.
Has he? That's a right I'll never grant to anyone on Earth.
There are no men of integrity, are there?
Her maniacal grin fades.
Well, you've met one.
There aren't. He's not any better than the rest of us.
What if he is?
If he were, I'd break him.
Nobody can break him.
He faces his wife's harsh gaze.
I'll find out.
Later, at Gail's office, a design sketch shows a three-story structure with flat roofs and overhangs.
Why did you accept this commission? Don't you hate me?
No, why should I?
Do you want me to speak of it first?
Of what?
The Enright house.
You had forgotten it, hadn't you? Let it remain forgotten.
I know what the banner has done to you, but I stand by every word printed in the banner.
I haven't asked you to retract it.
Mr. Rourke, I was away at the time of that campaign, but my editor was doing only what I had taught him. Had I been in town, I would have done the same.
That was your privilege.
You don't believe I would have done it?
No.
I haven't asked you for compliments or for pity. Sit down.
Both men sit. Howard smirks.
Mr. Rourke, I wish to sign a contract to make you sole architect for all the buildings I may erect in the future. If you accept, you will make a fortune. If you refuse, I will see to it that you'll never build again. You may have heard, I don't like to be refused. I want you to design my future commercial structures as the public wishes them to be designed. You will build colonial houses, rococo hotels, and semi-Grecian office buildings. You will take your spectacular talent and make it subservient to the taste of the masses. That is what I want.
Howard smirks again.
Of course. I'll be glad to do it. It's easy.
Howard pulls a manila envelope from a stack on Gale's desk and draws on it, glancing periodically at his design on the easel. His new sketch mirrors the horizontal lines of the original, but positions them more symmetrically. Gale taps his fingers on his desk as he waits. Howard shades in the roof of the house. The facade includes a Greek portico with four columns. Some squiggly lines below take the shape of a Venetian canal boat. Gale leans forward in his seat as Howard hands over the envelope.
Is this what you want?
Gale takes it from him. The sketch shows the house floating on water like a barge.
Good heavens, no.
Then shut up and don't ever let me hear any architectural suggestions.
Gale stands up from his chair.
I didn't think anyone would ever waste time trying to tempt me again.
Howard, I meant it until I saw that.
I knew you meant it.
You knew you were taking a terrible chance.
Not at all. I had an ally I could trust.
What, your integrity?
Yours, Gale.
Why do you think that about me?
Why don't you admit to yourself what we both knew the moment we met?
What?
That we're alike, you and I.
You're saying it about Gale Winant of the New York Banner?
I'm saying it about Gale Winant of Hell's Kitchen, who had the strength and spirit to rise by his own effort, but who made a bad mistake about the way he chose.
No. You shouldn't deal with me. You shouldn't remain here.
You wish to throw me out?
You know I can't.
He looks to the easel.
Shall I tell you now what I think of this?
Told me.
I'll take this drawing home to show my wife. I want her to see it and to thank you in person. Will you come and have dinner with us tonight?
Howard opens, then closes his mouth.
Will you?
Howard looks up at him.
Yes.
Gale smiles. Later at the Winant home, Dominique wears a sparkly blouse and black skirt. She looks through the blueprints for her new home. Behind her, a tuxedo-clad Gale walks off. Dominique looks up forlornly.
Howard!
Gale leads Howard into the study.
You two know each other.
How do you do, Mr. Rook?
How do you do, Mrs. Winant?
May I thank you for the house you designed for us? It's one of your most beautiful buildings.
If you like it, I fulfill the order your husband gave me.
What was the order?
To design a house as a temple to you, Mrs. Winant.
Shall I accept it as a tribute from Gale or from you?
From both of us.
I appreciate it. Particularly since I would have expected you to refuse the commission.
Why?
Was there nothing in your past to make you refuse it?
No.
Thank you, Howard.
I never expected you to forget and give in. Isn't Mr. Rourke the man you said you'd break?
I tried it and lost.
Are you admitting defeat? Both of you?
Do you wish to call it that? I think it was a victory for both of us.
Your feeling once granted, will you ever withdraw it?
Never.
Dominique's eyes slowly turn away from him.
Have you studied the floor plans of the house, Mrs. Winant? I should like to know whether the arrangement of the rooms is convenient.
The rooms?
Yes, the living room will open to a terrace over the lake.
Did you notice the windows of our bedroom? We'll get the first sunlight in the morning.
Think I could ever live in that house?
Why not?
I can't. Please. Don't ask me to live in it.
Why not, Mrs. Winant?
Dominique, what is it?
Nothing. Only the constant reminder. After the Enright house, we have no right.
Please, forget the Enright house.
Yes, Mr. Rowe.
Now Peter meets with Tui.
I wouldn't be so frightened if I could understand it. What have I done? Why did it happen?
What are you whining about?
There's no use kidding myself. I'm slipping. I've been slipping ever since Guy Franken retired. I've had less work each year. People are dropping me. Why?
You were a fashion, Peter. Fashions change.
But I was at the top. Why did I fall like that without any reason?
You wouldn't be so astonished if you asked yourself whether there's ever been any reason for you to be at the top.
But you used to say I was the greatest architect living.
Well, I could have had two reasons for saying it. Maybe I wanted to honor you. And maybe I wanted to dishonor and discredit all greatness.
I thought you were my friend.
Of course I'm your friend. I'm everybody's friend. I'm the friend of humanity. Now, why did you come here? What do you want?
Peter grins sheepishly.
Cortland Holmes.
Tui sits up on his couch.
You're not serious.
If I could get a great project to design, like Cortland Holmes, it would save whatever's left of my reputation.
But Cortland Holmes is to be the greatest of all housing projects. A model development, an example for the whole world.
You can help me, Ellsworth. You have a lot of influence on that project with those people.
Don't forget that this is not a Winant project. I'm only acting as an unofficial advisor to them, as an expert in architecture, nothing else.
But just a word of recommendation from you.
But Peter, do you imagine you could design Cortland? They haven't found anyone able to do it. They're stuck.
Do you know the big problem in housing? Economy. How to design a building that would rent at the lowest price possible. Cortland Homes has to be the most brilliant product of planning ingenuity and structural economy ever achieved. Do you think you could do that?
Well, I could try. I'd do my best.
Your best won't do it, Peter.
Toohey stands and walks behind Peter's chair.
But you may try if you wish.
Peter follows Toohey to his desk, where the columnist pulls out a bound stack of papers.
Here's all the dope on Cortland. Work out a preliminary scheme. If you can solve the problem, I'll submit it to the right people, and I'll push it for all I'm worth.
You will let me try.
All our best architects have tried and failed. Nothing can be done in life without an idea. My friends have the land, the money, the material, but not the man to originate the idea.
Later.
Howard, I'm a parasite. I've been a parasite all my life. You helped me with my projects in school. Everything I built was stolen from you and men like you who lived before we were born. I've never had an idea of my own. I fed on you and hated you for it, and I've come here to ask you to save me.
Go on.
Cortland is my last chance. I know I can't do it. I've tried. I've come to beg you, as I did in school, to design it for me, to design it and let me put my name on it. Well, I suppose there's no reason you should want to do it. If you can solve their problem, you can go to them yourself and obtain the commission.
Do you think I could get past Toohey?
No. No, you couldn't.
He's not the only one. I'll never be given a job by any group, board, council, or committee. But I would like to do this job.
You designed Cortland for me?
I might if you offer me enough.
Howard, anything you ask, anything.
Name a motive that would make me want to do it.
Well, there's no reason why you should want to save me.
No.
But it's a humanitarian project. Think of the people who live in slums. If you can give them decent housing, you perform a noble deed. Would you do it just for their sake?
No. A man who works for others without payment is a slave. I do not believe that slavery is noble, not in any form, nor for any purpose whatsoever.
Is there any kind of payment I can offer you?
Yes, there is. Now listen to me. I've worked on the problem of low-rent construction for years. I thought of the new inventions, the new materials, the great possibilities never used to build cheaply, simply, and intelligently. I loved it because it was a problem I wanted to solve.
Yes, I understand.
Peter, before you can do things for people, you must be the kind of man who can get things done. But to get things done, you must love the doing, not the people. Your own work, not any possible object of your charity. I'll be glad if men who need it find a better manner of living in the house I build. But that's not the motive of my work, nor my reason, nor my reward. My reward, my purpose, my life, is the work itself. My work done my way. Nothing else matters to me.
Sitting tensely, Peter swallows.
I've always wanted to build a large-scale project, but I never hoped to get the chance.
Howard levels his gaze on Peter.
Now, here's what I'll offer you.
He leans on his desk.
I will design Cortland. You'll put your name on it. You'll keep all the fees. You will guarantee that it will be built exactly as I design it.
I see.
No changes by you or by anyone else. That's the payment I demand for my work. My ideas are mine. Nobody else has a right to them except on my terms. Those who need them must take them my way or not at all.
All right, Howard. I guarantee it. I give you my word.
The two men shake hands. Howard faces the tall windows overlooking the city.
Say you're a fool, that I'm getting everything.
Howard spins around to face him.
You'll get everything that society can give. You'll take the money, the fame, and the gratitude. And I'll take that which nobody can give a man except himself.
He taps on his chest and grins.
I will have built Cortland.
Now Gail reads the banner.
After 2 years of futile attempts to solve the problems involved, design submitted by Peter Keating is an astonishingly skillful solution that provides the best living quarters yet devised at the lowest cost. What on earth are you up to?
What do you mean?
You think I pick artworks by their signatures? Who designed that project?
Peter Keating.
Gail shows the front page to his reclining wife.
Who designed this?
She looks at the photo.
Of course.
What are you after?
Drop it.
All right. I won't try to guess your motive, but I'd know your work anywhere.
Dominique sits up on her elbows.
Howard, I never expected to feel gratitude to anyone, but I'm grateful to you every moment of the day in the house you've built. I'm learning so many things I never expected to feel.
What?
The wonder of ownership. I'm a millionaire who's never owned anything. I've been public property all my life, like a city billboard. But this is mine. Here, I'm safe.
He turns to Howard.
Why didn't you come here yesterday? I missed you.
Too much work in the office.
You're killing yourself. You've worked too hard for years.
Haven't you?
Yes. We need a rest, both of us. My yacht's been refitted. I'm planning to go on a long cruise. I've meant to for years. I want you to go with me.
Neil, is this an obsession? What is Mr. Roark to you?
My youth.
Is he what you were in your youth?
Oh, no, much more than that. What I thought I'd be when I was 16.
I'm sure Mr. Roark can't go on a yacht cruise.
Why, yes, Mrs. Winant, I'd be glad to go.
I thought that you'd never give up your work for anyone.
I won't give it up. I'll take my first vacation.
You're willing to be away for months?
I'd enjoy it.
He watches her.
Dominic, it's incredible. I believe you're jealous. Wonderful. I'm even more grateful to him if he's made you jealous of me. Now, don't frown. I'll fix a drink. We'll toast the cruise.
As Gail gets up and crosses the yard, Dominique faces Howard through a forked tree.
Roark.
Howard sits up.
Roark, don't go with him. I can't stand this much longer. I am jealous. Of you. Of every moment you give him, of your impossible friendship. I don't want you to come here. I don't want you to like him.
I don't want to discuss it, Mrs. Winant.
He lies on his back and looks at his sketchbook. Later, on the moving yacht, Howard and Gail look at the city.
Howard, that's where I was born, Hell's Kitchen. I own most of it now, all those blocks. I decided when I was 16 that that's where the Winant building would stand one day and that it would be the tallest structure of the city. What's the matter? Do you want to build it? Do you want it pretty badly?
I think I'd almost give my life for it. Is that what you wanted to hear?
Something like that. Oh, I won't demand your life, but it's nice to shock you for once. I'll start to build it in a few years. Do you know how much it means to me?
Yes, I know what you want.
A monument to my life, Howard. After I'm gone, that building will be Gail Winant. My last and greatest achievement will also be your greatest. The Winant Building by Howard Roark. I've waited for it from the day I was born. From the day you were born, you waited for your one great chance. Well, there it is, Howard, on the site of Hell's Kitchen. Yours from me.
Now a model shows wall-shaped buildings, each with a wedge-like tower cutting it in half like an axe head.
Please, Mr. Keating, do let us stop arguing. We've engaged Mr. Prescott and Mr. Webb as your associate designers.
What for?
Well, it's such a tremendous project. You can afford to share the credit with two fellow architects who need a job. Don't be selfish. Besides, three minds are better than one.
But you've accepted my design.
Yes, of course, it's excellent, but we must make some improvements.
What improvements?
Well, the thing's too bare. I think we ought to add a few balconies.
Balconies? What for?
To give it a human touch.
We've got to have some kind of trimming over the entrance.
I won't allow it. It's my building. It's my design.
But why shouldn't we have any say at all? We want to express our individuality, too.
On another man's work?
What the heck? Any man's work is public property.
I can't let you. Don't you understand? I can't.
But, Peter, why not? What's the matter? You never fought with your clients before. Is there anything different in this case?
But they're ruining the building. You know they are.
Oh, I suppose so. What do you care?
Peter turns to his clients.
You made a contract with me that Cortland be built exactly as I designed it. I did it on that condition and only on that condition.
What's a contract?
You're old-fashioned, Keating.
But I have a contract.
Well, what are you going to do about it? Sue us? Go ahead, try it. You'll find that you can't sue us.
But you have no right to do this.
What are rights, Peter? Whose rights?
Oh, what's the use of talking? Let's go to work.
An architect bashes a large-scale model of one building with a cane. Now at a construction site, Howard and Peter look at a completed building with sides resembling a patchwork quilt. Howard shakes his head. The building has fenced balconies and a Greek frieze over the entryway.
I couldn't help it, Howard. They started making changes without any reason. Everybody had authority and nobody. I tried to fight. They pushed me from office to office. I couldn't help it.
I suppose not.
I had no way to reach you. I was waiting for you to come back. I was afraid. What are you going to do? They've got themselves such a setup that you can't sue them.
No.
Want me to confess the truth to them, to everybody?
No.
Will you let me give you all the money they paid me?
Howard glares.
I'm sorry. Howard. What are you going to do?
You have to leave that up to me, no?
He eyes the apartment building. Later, he sits in his dark office, going over his blueprints. He glances back, then quickly folds the pages over. Dominique walks in.
Why did you come here?
Because I couldn't stand it any longer. You've been away for months. I had to see you again, to see you alone.
Please go.
She steps closer.
Rob, do I mean nothing to you?
I can't answer you now.
I stayed away from you for years. I tried to forget you. I couldn't. You knew I never would.
Yes.
I never thought it would be Gail who'd bring you back to me. Don't you see why I can't stand it now? Living in a house you designed, seeing you constantly as a stranger. Having no right to look at you, to speak, to tell you that...
Don't say it.
Remember, you said once that you... For all the years, we'll have to wait.
Howard rests his mouth against his fist.
Look, I know. Because you've known what I felt all these years. We can never change it, neither one of us. I'm going to leave Gail. You may refuse to see me again, but I'm going to leave him.
Howard abruptly turns to her. He purses his lips, then looks back down to the blueprints.
Before you leave him, will you help me with a problem of my own?
Yes.
Will you do it without asking any questions?
Yes, Rock, anything you want.
He spreads out a poster-sized page.
You've seen Cortland Holmes?
Yes, I know what they've done to your work.
Next Monday night, I want you to drive up to the site of Cortland. You must be alone in your car. You must make it appear afterward that you were just an innocent bystander.
Rock, I know what you're going to do.
He looks up at her.
This is a test, isn't it? You want to know whether I can equal your courage, whether I'm still afraid for you, whether I can help you to take the most terrible chance you've ever taken.
You can guess anything you wish. Just listen. When I finish, don't tell me whether you will help me or not. If you decide to do it, say nothing. But let me see you do it.
All right. Go on.
Drive up to Cortland Monday night at 11:30.
Nighttime. An automobile drives alongside a fence surrounding the Cortland Homes project. The car slows to a stop by the foreman's site office. A watchman with a flashlight walks to a gated fence and opens it. He stares at Dominique inside the car.
I ran out of gas. May I use your telephone, please?
I'm sorry, ma'am, but our phone's gone dead tonight.
Dominique gets out.
Where's the nearest garage?
Way down the road.
Would you mind going there and getting somebody to help me?
She offers money.
Sure will, young lady. Glad to.
The old watchman shuts the wooden gate, then heads down the road. Dominique watches his flashlight beam bounce along the piles of lumber stacked at the site's perimeter. She then heads to the wire fence and looks inside at the partly constructed buildings. Glancing down the street, she rushes back to her car and shuts the door, then dashes into the site. She bounds over hollow pipes and scattered tools, then leaps into a deep ditch. She lands face down. As fireballs erupt throughout the site, Dominique clings to the wall of the ditch and grins ecstatically. She stands, squinting as debris falls all around her. She then climbs out and traverses the smoldering construction site. Her hooded black dress thrashes in the wind as she runs to her car. She pries open the door from beneath a toppled beam and climbs inside. Lying against the opposite door, she quickly sprinkles herself with shards from the broken windshield. Dominique picks up a long piece of glass in her gloved hand and holds it to her wrist. She grits her teeth, dragging it across her flesh. Meanwhile, two police officers cross the site and find a detonator. Next to it, Howard stands defiantly.
What do you know about this?
Arrest me. I'll talk at the trial.
Later.
We don't have to wait for the trial to convict him. Howard Rourke is guilty by his very nature. It is whispered that he designed Cortland. What if he did? Society needed a housing project. It was his duty to sacrifice his own desires and to contribute any ideas we demanded of him on any terms we chose. Who is society? We are. Man can be permitted to exist only in order to serve others. He must be nothing but a tool for the satisfaction of their needs. Self-sacrifice is the law of our age. The man who refuses to submit and to serve, Howard Rourke, the supreme egoist, is a man who must be destroyed.
Spectators rise from their seats, waving hats and fists in support of Toohey. now in Gale's office.
We have never learned to understand what is greatness in man. Self-sacrifice, we drool, is the ultimate virtue. Let's stop and think. Can a man sacrifice his integrity, his rights, his freedom, his convictions, the honesty of his feeling, the independence of his thought?
He leans on his desk.
These are a man's supreme possessions. To what must he sacrifice them? To whom? Self-sacrifice? But it is precisely the self that cannot and must not be sacrificed. A man's self is his spirit. It is the unsacrificed self that we must respect in man above all. And where do we find it? In a man like Howard Roark. Have that run off and set up on tomorrow's front page.
Yes, Mr. Wynand.
Gale, are you out of your mind defending that...
Keep still, Alvaro, I'll bash your teeth in.
The whole city is against him. An unpopular cause is dangerous business for anyone. For a popular newspaper, it's suicide. Public opinion is
responsible... Public opinion is what I make it. For once, I'll fight for what I believe.
You stand alone against everybody for the first time in your life?
Yes, for the first time in my life.
Now a hazy bedside lamp shines in a hospital room. Dominique turns her head on her pillow and faces her husband.
You little fool, why did you have to make such a good job of it? Didn't you know the broken glass is dangerous?
It didn't hurt.
The next time you want to play the innocent bystander, let me coach you. You didn't have to cut an artery.
Do the police believe that I was only an innocent bystander?
Oh, yes, they believe it. They have to. You almost died. They don't know that you'd risk your life for him.
For whom?
Howard. Haven't you always fought for his work?
Dominique looks off and nods weakly.
I'm glad you did it, and that it was for him. I'm glad he did it. He had to.
Yes. Have they arrested him?
He's out on bail.
What has he told?
Nothing. He's refused to make any statement. They all say he's guilty. They can find no motive. They think he designed Cortland, but they can't prove it.
Is the public against him?
It's the worst storm of public fury I've ever seen.
Are all the newspapers against him?
Except one.
She takes his hand.
Okay. If you'll stand by him today...
Don't offer me any bribes. It's the battle I've waited for all my life. I know how much I have to redeem. This will be my redemption. This time the banner is serving a crusade.
Now the banner's front page reads, in defense of Howard Roark. A later headline reads, Cortland is a test case. Back in Dominique's hospital room, Howard steps around the foot of her bed and tosses his fedora on a chair. Dominique smiles up at him from her pillow, her eyes twinkling in the light of the room.
I was waiting for you to come.
Howard kneels at her bedside.
Do you want to ask me any questions now?
No.
I may be sent to the penitentiary for years. Does that frighten you?
No, I'll share whatever they do to you. I failed you once because I was afraid to see you suffer. Now I'll stand by you openly. I'll take the disgrace, the scandal, the smear as anything.
He kisses her hand.
Yes.
He brushes it across his cheek.
You're Mrs. Gale Wynand. You're above suspicion. Everybody believes you're at the scene by accident. If you let it be known what we mean to each other, it'll be a confession that I did it.
Is that why you asked me to help you? In order to stop me from joining you now?
Yes. Dominique, if I'm convicted, I want you to remain with Gale. And you must not tell him about us. Because he and you will need each other.
All right. If that's what you want. But if you're acquitted...
We can't speak of that now.
You'll be acquitted.
That's not what I wanted to hear you say.
If they convict you, if they lock you in jail, if they never let you design another building, if they never let me see you again, it won't break me. I know how to fight it. I'm not afraid of them any longer.
That's what I wanted to hear all these years.
He kisses her hand again. Now Peter squirms under Tui's gaze.
Who designed Cortland?
Let me alone.
It's too late, Peter.
Let me go.
Who designed Cortland?
Why do you want to kill Roark?
I don't want to kill him. I want him in jail, behind bars, locked, strapped, beaten. He'll move as he's told. He'll work as he's told. He'll obey. He'll take orders.
Ellsworth, what are you after?
Power. What do you think is power? Whips, guns, money? You can't turn men into slaves unless you break their spirit, kill their capacity to think and act on their own. Tie them together, teach them to conform, to unite, to agree, to obey. That makes one neck ready for one leash.
Ellsworth.
You've heard me preaching it for years, but you didn't have the wits to know what you were hearing. Why do you suppose I denounced greatness and praised mediocrities like you? Great men can't be ruled. Why did I preach self-sacrifice? If you kill a man's sense of personal value, he'll submit. Can you do that to Howard Rourke? No? Then don't ask me why I want to destroy him. That's what they mean, your noble ideals. You believed in me. Well, what's left of you now? Come on. Who designed Cortland?
Peter looks up at him wearily.
Howard Rourke.
Toohey grins.
On what condition?
That it must be built as he designed it.
Toohey opens a notebook.
Write it down. Write a full confession.
He hands the architect a pen. Peter takes it and turns to the notepad. Toohey watches him, his arms crossed.
You're a great success, Peter. You're my best achievement. The totally selfless man.
Nighttime. A lake reflects the lit windows of the Winand house. Inside.
Selfish? Is that what they call me? Well, I am. I live by the judgment of my own mind and for my own sake.
Let them say what they please about you. By the time you come to trial, no jury will convict you. The public will think what I want them to think. The banner will save you. Dominic, do you see why I love the banner? I hold power.
Are you sure of it, Gale?
You'll see the demonstration for yourself. I rule that city. I've never lost a battle.
It's your first test of a real issue, which...
Hello. Speaking. Yes, Alba.
Keating has admitted Rourke designed Cortland. Toohey has a signed confession.
What?
It made the front page of the other daily, so we had to go along.
Stay there. I'll come at once.
What is it?
Ellsworth Toohey got a confession from Peter Keating. It's on the front pages of tomorrow's papers, including the banner.
Gale, I'm not counting on public opinion one way or the other, so don't be afraid for me.
I'll fight for you if it takes everything I own.
Gale storms off. Now, outside the banner building, a brick smashes through a window in the front door. Inside, Alva's office overlooks the newsroom, its many desks now empty.
When I can't fire anyone on my paper, I'll close it and blow your brains out. All mine.
They've walked out on us. The whole city room. Our best boys. They're Toohey's best friends. They won't work without him.
Ellsworth Toohey is fired and stays fired.
I can't understand how Ellsworth got so much power. I never noticed it, but he got his gang in little by little, and now he owns them.
And I own the banner.
Do you, Mr. Winand?
Toohey arrives.
So you were out of power, Mr. Winand. And you thought you were a practical man? You left to impractical intellectuals like me the whole field of ideas to corrupt as we please while you were busy making money. You thought money was power. Is it, Mr. Winand? You poor amateur. You've never been enough of a scoundrel for your own ambition. That's why I'll be back on this job. And when I am, I'll run this paper.
When you are. Now get out of here.
Smirking, Toohey turns and leaves. Later, a sign outside the building reads, New York, the Banner, the newspaper for the people. In front, people hold up picket signs with slogans condemning the paper's policies. One reads, We don't read Winand. Now at a party, cocktail napkins bear the same slogan. A woman takes one with her drink.
Oh, how clever, my dear.
Yes, it is, isn't it? We must do what we can for the cause. I just fired my cook because I caught her reading the banner.
Nighttime. A sign on a brick wall reads, We don't read Winand. On the sidewalk below, a man punches a vendor to the ground beside a banner newsstand. A mob tosses the papers in the air, topples the stand, and flees. Now Gale stands inside Alva's office.
Gale, what are we gonna do? I can't get anyone. They refuse no matter what salary I offer. Nobody wants to work for the banner. Nobody wants to read it. How long can we go on like this?
To the end.
He marches out through the nearly empty newsroom. Reaching his own office, he lets out a puff of smoke from his cigarette, then turns abruptly. Dominique sits in a leather armchair in front of a display of the world map.
Gale, give me back my old job. I should be proud to work for the banner now.
Smiling, Gale nods.
Come on.
She follows him to his desk.
Take these to the back room. Pick up the wire flimsies and bring them to me. Then report to Manning at the city desk.
Taking the proofs from him, Dominique holds his hand, then walks off. Her husband watches her proudly. Nighttime. on a loading dock outside the Banner building. Two men push a cart loaded with newspapers up a ramp. Inside, they pass a man with a clipboard as they wheel the cart past dozens of tall stacks of papers. Another man drops a bundle of papers onto a dolly.
One return, see?
Yep.
Just be the creeps. Looks just like slabs in the cemetery.
And they keep growing every night.
Guess nobody buys the Banner anymore.
They're killing themselves. Work night and day, and still newspapers come back unread.
Now in the newsroom, a stark light hangs from the ceiling over Dominique's desk. A man approaches, crossing the paper-strewn floor.
Ready with it, Ms. Winer?
There's the Sunday makeup. It's fairly rotten, but it'll have to do. I sent Manny home. He was going to collapse. Jackson quit. We can do without it. Oh, this column was a mess. I rewrote it. Don't tell him. Say Gail did.
All right.
As he examines the layouts, Dominique sets a coffee pot on a tray and carries it off. Meanwhile, Gail sits in his office with his head resting on his desk. Dominique opens the door, spilling light into the room. She stands, staring at her motionless husband, then carries the tray over and sets it by him. Turning off his desk lamp, she studies his dark form, then turns to leave. Gail lifts his head. Silhouetted against the light from the newsroom, Dominique turns back to her husband, then walks around his desk. She rests her cheek on his head.
Be all right, Gail. We'll be all right.
The Banner is not helping Howard. It's ruining him. It's turning more people against him.
He doesn't care about that, but stand by and don't give in to them.
I can't save him.
He went in his own way.
I can't save him. I have no power. I never had any power. Nobody's ever listened to me because nobody's ever respected me. I wasn't a ruler of the mob. I was its tool.
If you don't give in, you'll save yourself and the Banner.
I never ran the Banner. They did. The men in the street. It was their paper, not mine. There's nothing to save now.
Oh, Gail, don't give in to them. Don't give in.
Now in a boardroom, well-dressed men sit around a table.
You'd better give in. We can't permit this to go on.
After all, we're your board of directors. We have something to say.
We've lost all our advertisers. We lost our public. And for what?
Now, if it were a serious cause, but for some fool dynamiter.
What is this, an intellectual issue? Are we losing our shirts for principles or something?
Gail, it's no use.
We must call Ellsworth Toohey and take him back. We must reverse our stand on the Cortland case. We must come out against Rourke.
Winan, this is final. Yes or no?
Give in or close the Banner.
You'd better give in.
Standing at the head of the table, Gail scans the room.
All right.
He clutches the back of a chair and lowers his head. Now rain falls on an issue of the Banner with a photo of Howard on the front page. A headline reads, "Denounced by public opinion." Beside it, an article ends with the sentence, "If found guilty, as seems inevitable, Howard Rourke must be made to bear the fullest penalty the law can impose on him." The tagline reads, "Gail Winand." A man's shoe steps on the newspaper, leaving a muddy footprint over Howard's face. Gail stands on the sidewalk nearby. Tossing his cigarette, he steps over to the paper and sits on the wet curb beside it. As he lifts it, it tears apart in his hands. Grimacing, Gail holds his eyes closed. Now in a courtroom, a wood-carved eagle stands perched on a sill over a judge's bench.
I solemnly ask of every man who hears this case to let his own mind pronounce a verdict upon it. You have heard the testimony of the state's witnesses. The confession of Peter Keating has made clear that Howard Rourke is a ruthless egoist who has destroyed Cortland Holmes for his own selfish motive. The issue which you are to decide is the crucial issue of our age. Has man any right to exist if he refuses to serve society? Let your verdict give us the answer. The state rests.
The defense may proceed.
Sitting at a table, Howard looks to the judge, rises from his seat, and approaches the bench.
Your Honor, I shall call no witnesses. This will be my testimony and my summation.
Take the oath.
He raises his right hand.
Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Howard approaches the jury box.
Thousands of years ago, the first man discovered how to make fire. He was probably burned at the stake he had taught his brothers to light, but he left them a gift they had not conceived, and he lifted darkness off the earth. Throughout the centuries, there were men who took first steps down new roads, armed with nothing but their own vision.
The great creators, the thinkers, the artists, the scientists, the inventors, stood alone against the men of their time. Every new thought was opposed. Every new invention was denounced. But the men of unborrowed vision went ahead. They fought, they suffered, and they paid, but they won. No creator was prompted by a desire to please his brothers. His brothers hated the gift he offered. His truth was his only motive. His work was his only goal. His work, not those who used it. His creation, not the benefits others derive from it. The creation which gave form to his truth. He held his truth above all things and against all men.
He faces the room full of citizens.
He went ahead, whether others agreed with him or not, with his integrity as his only banner. He served nothing and no one. He lived for himself. And only by living for himself was he able to achieve the things which are the glory of mankind. Such is the nature of achievement. Man cannot survive except through his mind. He comes on earth unarmed. His brain is his only weapon. But the mind is an attribute of the individual. There is no such thing as a collective brain. The man who thinks must think and act on his own. The reasoning mind cannot work under any form of compulsion. It cannot be subordinated to the needs, opinions, or wishes of others. It is not an object of sacrifice. The creator stands on his own judgment. The parasite follows the opinions of others. The creator thinks. The parasite copies. The creator produces. The parasite loots. The creator's concern is the conquest of nature. The parasite's concern is the conquest of men. The creator requires independence. He neither serves nor rules. He deals with men by free exchange and voluntary choice. The parasite seeks power. He wants to bind all men together in common action and common slavery. He claims that man is only a tool for the use of others, that he must think as they think, act as they act, and live in selfless, joyless servitude to any need but his own. Look at history. Everything we have, every great achievement has come from the independent work of some independent mind. Every horror and destruction came from attempts to force men into a herd of brainless, soulless robots without personal rights, without personal ambition, without will, hope, or dignity. It is an ancient conflict. It has another name, the individual against the collective. Our country, the noblest country in the history of men, was based on the principle of individualism, the principle of man's inalienable rights.
He faces the jury.
It was a country where a man was free to seek his own happiness, to gain and produce, not to give up and renounce, to prosper, not to starve, to achieve, not to plunder, to hold as his highest possession a sense of his personal value, and as his highest virtue, his self-respect. Look at the results. That is what the collectivists are now asking you to destroy, as much of the earth has been destroyed.
He looks again to the people.
I am an architect. I know what is to come by the principle on which it is built. We are approaching a world in which I cannot permit myself to live. My ideas are my property. They were taken from me by force, by breach of contract. No appeal was left to me. It was believed that my work belonged to others to do with as they pleased. They had a claim upon me without my consent, that it was my duty to serve them without choice or reward. Now you know why I dynamited Cortland. I designed Cortland. I made it possible. I destroyed it. I agreed to design it for the purpose of seeing it built as I wished. That was the price I set for my work. I was not paid. My building was disfigured at the whim of others who took all the benefits of my work and gave me nothing in return. I came here to say that I do not recognize anyone's right to 1 minute of my life, nor to any part of my energy, nor to any achievement of mine, no matter who makes the claim. It had to be said. The world is perishing from an orgy of self-sacrificing. I came here to be heard, In the name of every man of independence still left in the world, I wanted to state my terms. I do not care to work or live on any others. My terms are a man's right to exist for his own sake.
Howard glances at the judge, then returns to his table and sits. Later, the judge addresses the jury.
Further, you are instructed that the extent of the monetary loss suffered by the owners is not a matter to be considered by you. The liability of the defendant for any financial loss is a question to be determined in a civil suit. You are concerned here only with a criminal action. You are to determine whether the defendant is guilty or innocent of the specific crime with which he has been charged. You are the exclusive judges of the facts. And under the instructions I have given you, it is your duty and your duty alone to determine the guilt or innocence of the accused.
A bailiff points the jurors to a door. As they file out, Dominique watches them from her seat. As most of the courtroom's occupants stand and head out through the doors, Dominique remains in her seat in the front row. Her eyes turn to Howard. Howard smiles at her, leaning back in his chair, then looks over to Gail, who is seated in the back row. Pale and drawn, Gail looks down. Howard's face turns serious. Dominique leans toward the railing in front of her and wrings her gloved hands. Later, one of the Cortland architects confers with Tui. A bailiff opens the door to the jury room. He then turns and nods to another man who peers into the judge's chambers.
Your Honor?
The bailiff waves the jurors in. As they fill the two rows of the jury box, a sweaty-faced Peter watches from his seat. In the back of the courtroom, Gail sits grimly. Dominique turns her gaze forward. Howard purses his lips as the judge takes the bench.
Foreman, you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
The prisoner will rise and face the jury.
Howard stands. In the back of the courtroom, Gail stands as well. The judge stares at the jury foreman.
What is your verdict?
Not guilty.
Howard smiles, then turns to face the spectators. Standing in back, Gail wears a pained expression. The smile drops from Howard's face as Gail turns and leaves. Dominique grins at Howard. A weak smile crosses his face again as he looks around the room. Later, Enright leans over the model of the Cortland housing project.
I have bought from them the plans, the site, and the ruins of Cortland. It's mine now and yours. You'll rebuild it for me, just as you planned it.
Mr. Rourke, Mr. Gail Winan wishes to know whether you could come to his office.
Is he on the wire?
No, it's Mr. Winan's secretary.
Yes, tell her yes.
As the secretary leaves, Howard looks off pensively. Later, a secretary at the Banner lets Howard into Gail's office. Howard smiles at the editor, who stands stiffly at his desk with the view of the city behind him. Howard's face turns serious as he approaches.
Mr. Rourke, this interview is necessary, but very difficult for me. Please act accordingly.
Yes, Mr. Winan.
As they sit opposite each other, Gail hands Howard a contract.
Please read this and sign it, if it meets with your approval.
What is it?
Your contract to design the Winan building. Please listen carefully, Mr. Rourke. I have closed my newspaper. The Banner has ceased to exist. I wish to undertake the construction of the Winan building at once. It is to be the tallest structure of the city. You will design it as you wish. You will have full charge and complete authority. But I do not care ever to see you again. Please read the contract and sign it.
Keeping his eyes locked on Gail, Howard snatches a pen from a holder on the desk and signs the contract.
You haven't read it.
Looking up at him with a wry smirk, Howard hands over the contract. Gail reads his signature, then holds up another.
Please sign both copies.
Howard signs again. Gail reaches out his hand to receive the second copy.
Thank you.
Gail lays it down in front of himself and signs.
This will be the last skyscraper ever built in New York. The last achievement of man on Earth before mankind destroys itself.
Mankind will never destroy itself, Mr. Winan, nor should it think of itself as destroyed. Not so long as it does things such as this.
As what?
As the Winan building.
That is up to you. Dead things
such as the Banner, are only the financial fertilizer that will make it possible. It is their proper function.
Gale folds the contract.
I told you once that this building was to be a monument to my life. There is nothing to commemorate now. The Winant building will have nothing, except what you give it.
He offers the folded contract to Howard, who takes it from him. Gale rises to his feet, and Howard stands to face him. As the two men stare at each other, Howard's mouth closes. He backs up from the desk, turns, and crosses the sparsely furnished office. Stopping in front of the world map display, he turns back to Gale. Gale nods, his face brightening.
Build it as a monument to that spirit which is yours and could have been mine.
Howard looks down thoughtfully, then turns and leaves. Gale stares at the door, one side of his face cloaked in shadow from the room's dim lighting. He sits back down at his desk and pulls open a drawer. Inside, sitting neatly by a row of pencils, is a pistol. He picks it up. Gale's hand falls limply on top of the signed contract. His fingers loosen around the gun. Now the center tower of a partially erected building rises straight up into the cloudy sky. Below, a framed sign reads, "The Winant Building, the tallest structure in the world." Beneath it, a plaque reads, "Howard Roark, Architect." Dominique grins, then steps past it to an open door.
May I see Mr. Roark, please?
Well, Mr. Roark's way up on top. Who's calling, ma'am?
Mrs. Roark.
Oh.
As the man presses a button, a short wooden door opens beside Dominique. She heads through to a construction area, where an open-air elevator lowers three workmen to the ground. They exit, and Dominique steps aboard. Another man fastens a barrier rope across the platform's open end, then raises his thumb. The elevator carries Dominique up alongside the building. Holding onto an overhead beam, she looks out over the city while the wind whips through her shoulder-length hair. She lets go of the beam and leans over the barrier rope as she rises up the scaffold-like elevator shaft. A series of X-shaped cross pieces flash by. The city's boxy concrete rooftops recede farther and farther away. Dominique holds her arm up to the beam again and smiles. She rises higher than any other building in view. Dominique's head turns as the city below grows ever more distant. Even the Empire State Building appears small. Dominique smiles, then turns and looks upward. The last stretch of the elevator shaft leads to the top of the building, where a lone figure stands at the edge. Dominique closes her mouth and grins. The figure waves. It's Howard. His dark shirt billows in the wind, his sleeves rolled up to his biceps. As the elevator reaches the top, Howard peers down toward its single passenger, holding his hands on his hips in a ruggedly gallant pose. Fade to black. Words appear. The end. A Warner Brothers First National Picture.